I received a kidney transplant about a year before the COVID-19 pandemic began. I also work for an academic health sciences center, so from the start, I was acutely aware of the need to protect myself from this deadly virus. And I have. I've made it through, as of March 2022, without contracting COVID-19 by always masking in public, social distancing, avoiding crowds, following good hygiene. For periods when case numbers were especially high, I completely isolated myself from the public and from my family and friends. The most isolation I have felt, though, has been from how a portion of the U.S. population has turned a public health crisis into a game of politics. Over the last 2 years, large numbers of my fellow Americans have refused even the simplest steps to help protect the 7 million of us in this country who live with suppressed immune systems. They refuse masks and mask mandates. They refuse safe, tested vaccines. They refuse even to avoid gathering in crowds. Vaccines don't create antibodies for many of us who have suppressed immune systems. During the Omicron wave of COVID-19, it was reported repeatedly that the only people hospitalized with severe COVID were those who refused to be vaccinated and those who were immune suppressed. As the political fight over masks and vaccines raged during that scary time, the message to the immunosuppressed was this: you are on your own. There was no coming together in an American wave of sentiment to protect our own. America did not unite against this common enemy. It continued to divide itself with no concern for those like me with suppressed immune systems. If a deadly global pandemic wasn't enough to overcome political divides and bring this country together, I'm not sure that anything ever will.
3 days is how long you had COVID before you came into my emergency department. 3 hours is how long you were my patient. 3 times I went through your scans, your labs, your vital signs. And all 3 times, I felt a pit in my stomach. Something was wrong. 3 times I explained to you, I don't know what it is, but something is giving me a bad feeling. Please don't leave the hospital. Please don't. 3 times you assured me you felt much better than when you got here. You were going to be fine. You had a 3-year-old daughter at home that you had to put to bed, and your husband was a real nervous guy. If he felt like anything was wrong, he was going to bring you back in a heartbeat. You had a pulse ox. You were set. 3 hours later, he brought you back. It was 3 hours too late. Should have said it 4, 5, 6, 7, a dozen times, however many it took. I'm sorry I didn't.
This is to my daddy, Larry Dwayne Reed, who died on the 30th of December, 2020, at the age of 78. I knew if you got COVID, it would be very hard on you, but I understood your desire to live life fully because that's who you were. You lived big and loved big. I benefited from you being that way all my life. How blessed I am that you were my daddy. When I talked to you on the phone and heard your cough, I was so worried, but you reassured me it was just your yearly Christmas bronchitis. You got tested to be on the safe side because you were going to go with me to get the boys from the airport. I remember when you called to tell me that you had tested positive. But I also remember your voice lifting as you talked of getting monoclonal antibodies as soon as possible. You had counted on that treatment and were so disappointed to find out it wasn't available in Crossville. I will always be haunted by the wonder of how different your outcome might have been if you had gotten the antibodies that Monday. Not being able to be with you while you were in the hospital was so hard. I understood the policy because I had been enforcing it where I worked, but it was so very hard to enforce and even harder to comply. I know that is one of Mama's biggest regrets, not fighting for the chance to get to see you. She misses you so much. I did manage to get approval to see you on Tuesday night. I had to stand in the doorway, but at least I could talk to you, see you, and I made you smile by bringing cardboard cutouts of the boys. Now hang on to that blessing. You sang while I was there. You always sang, my whole life. I also hang on to the blessing of being permitted to be with you the morning they extubated you. I am thankful you and Mama had discussed your wishes, and she had no doubt what you would want. The fact that you had delivered three of the staff on duty in the ICU that day was such a heartwarming reminder of the wonderful man you were and of the legacy you built, the legacy that I am part of. Thank you for being such an incredible man and being the best daddy in all the world.
I met you, Maria, when you were in the ICU. You were intubated and medically paralyzed because the amount of pressure needed to force air into your lungs would have made you so uncomfortable. There were no visitors allowed, so we called your family daily to give the updates. Your husband told me how important you were to your family, a wife, a mother, a daughter, a sister, a friend. You were the one always welcoming people into your home. The door was always open. Every day at 2, your family gathered at your home to pray the rosary. So I got a plastic pink rosary from our spiritual care office, and I put on my N95 and my goggles, gown, gloves, and I prayed the rosary with you too. When you had a bleed in your brain and it was clear you would not survive, I sat on the floor where your husband had slumped after he heard the news. I wish I had known you as the young, beautiful, loving woman your family told me you were. Their life got dimmer the day you died.
You could not fathom what it was like working through COVID-19 in funeral service. I don't care what you saw in the news or what articles you read, there is nothing that can tell you what we as funeral directors went through. And I'm not ashamed to admit, COVID-19 had me at the lowest, darkest place in my life. I worked 90-hour work week. My hair was falling out in chunks. I was down to about 110 pounds. And every time I ate, I would vomit. And that was just the physical effects from working through it. And for a little perspective, I would typically do anything like 10 to 15 funerals a month. In this case, at the height of the pandemic, I did 70 funerals in 1 month. We would have to get in full isolation gear and crawl into tractor trailer trucks that were refrigeration trucks. And there was bodies in body bags. I can remember walking into one that had 78 bodies inside and having to go through all of the tags to find who I was looking for. This is what most funeral homes and chapels look like, just stacked and stacked with human remains. In the same room where we used to wake one person and celebrate one person's life. I remember being on the phone with somebody and she was like, I dropped my husband off to the hospital and now you're going to give me his ashes? We were so overwhelmed. We couldn't embalm these bodies. We couldn't store these bodies. We had to get refrigeration trucks. The cemeteries and crematories were booked out for literally weeks and weeks on end. And it was our responsibility to take care of all of them, to get them all where they needed to go. But you see, a big part of funeral service is working with the bereaved. It's working with the family, and it's getting them through a process that we believe in, just the funeral. We couldn't do that. I don't mean to sound harsh, but it was like we were a human disposal service. People were robbed of their cultural beliefs, things they must do in order to honor a loved one. The phones would ring like rapid fire. You would be lucky if you had an hour of sleep before responding to another death call. People begging you on the phone. You're the 36th funeral home I called. Please help me. And for any funeral director who went through that, your job is done. You made good in this world.
I was diagnosed with COVID in September of 2020. My illness with COVID was very mild. The hardest thing for me at that time was seeing the worry and fear in my wife and hearing her say, "What if I never get to see you again?" as she dropped me off at the hospital. Fortunately, in that regard, I had very few symptoms, and my hospital stay was short and pretty uneventful. The problems came later. For a little backstory, in 2016, I had a double lung transplant as the result of a lifetime with cystic fibrosis. And up until COVID, my transplant was a huge success. By October of 2020, I was hospitalized with transplant rejection. We tried several methods of stopping the rejection, but the only thing that worked to even slow it down was a treatment called photopheresis. Twice a week, I have to travel an hour each way to have a treatment done on my blood. I'm currently on oxygen 24/7 and finishing testing to get a second double lung transplant. Hopefully. I lost more than 75% of my lung function over the course of a year. All of this could have been avoided if everyone did their part, if everyone had worn masks and followed the guidelines like I did. I fear that if and when I do get another transplant, the unvaccinated will continue to allow this virus to rage on and mutate, and I will never be safe from it. Or even worse, that when I get the call for the transplant, I won't get it because all of the beds will be full. Please get vaccinated. Continue to wear masks in public. This isn't about you. It's about all the people like me.
This is my story of when I first encountered COVID in a small rural hospital in the year 2020. It was 3 months after I graduated nursing school, and little did I know that my journey, this grueling journey, was about to unfold. This is my story. This virus isn't real, you tell me, as I put your nasal cannula on you as you gasp for air. This virus isn't real. I want to see my family, you say firmly, as we change you into a gown and place you in isolation. This virus isn't real, you sheep, as I come to your bedside in my gown, N95, goggles, and gloves, as you are unable to see my face. This virus isn't real. I'm not that sick. I get short of breath with my COPD all the time, you say as your 70-year-old body fights for air, as I increase your oxygen to compensate. This virus isn't real. I am a rancher. I am invincible, you say as your body shakes from working hard to breathe, as the virus chews up your lungs. This virus isn't real, you gasp, as I bring in the only BiPAP machine we have in our 20-bed hospital. This virus, you trail off as you close your eyes as I turn on the machine. I see you lying motionless in your bed, waiting for the medical helicopter to come to transfer you to a higher level of care. This virus is real, very real. I remove my PPE, personal protective equipment, and move on to my next COVID-19 patient. I enter the room with new PPE, and the news is blaring on the TV. See, they say, it's not that bad. Besides, it's just like the flu. It ain't real. They just want you to believe it is. The patient kept coughing, and I started to turn up his oxygen. The virus is real.